All right, lots happening in the world of employment. Families of the folks who passed away in last week's attack in the Capitol and others who were there might have a hard time filing suit or recovering damages from the federal government. Here to discuss, you know him well, Jonathan Bell, an employment attorney extraordinaire, small business expert, founder of the fantastic Bell Law Group, BLG. It's Bell, LG.com. That's the website, BellLG.com. The aforementioned Jonathan Bell. Sir, how are you? Happy New Year. Welcome back.
I'm doing great, Jay. Happy New Year to you and your family. It's great to be back on and to talk to you again.
Always good to have you. Let's get into this a little bit. Reading about it yesterday, we have families now who might be shunned as trying to collect damages and everything else from last week's debacle of the Capitol building. Others who were there, hard time filing suit, possibly recovering damages from the federal government. Give us a little bit of the situation at hand as to why.
Sure, Jay. Well, to sue the United States for either personal injuries or property damage, you have to go through something called the Federal Tort Claims Act. So it's a little bit of a different process than suing an individual. Otherwise, the government is entitled to something called sovereign immunity. So this is an exception to that. So to file a claim against the U.S. government, you first have to file with the particular agency that you believe was negligent. So here would be the Capitol Police officers. The claim would have to be filed within 2 years. And then the Capitol Police officers would have 6 months to investigate and potentially resolve the claim. If they can't resolve it, then the individuals can bring an action in district court. Most personal injury cases are brought in state court, but when you're suing the federal government, you have to go to district court. Now, in the typical situation, you know, let's say you went into a United States Postal Service to mail a letter, and you slipped and fell, and you believe that there was a defective condition, an employee who was acting in the scope of his employment failed to maintain or clean the premises, and you slipped and you fractured your ankle, you'd file a claim against the Postal Service through this notice requirement. And then 6 months later, you could then start to claim in federal court. And in that situation, you probably have a decent case because you have to prove liability. You have to prove two things, liability and damages. You have to have them both to have a successful claim. Well, if you could prove in the Postal Service situation that they were negligent, you have liability. And if you have a fractured ankle, you have damages. Now let's talk about this claim here. We have protesters that got out of control. They were violent. They were trespassing. They were reckless and acting in a very dangerous capacity. And with that, the Capitol Police officers were defending themselves, defending the building, and otherwise doing their job. So I'm pretty confident that if any of these family members do try to file a claim, ultimately they will not be successful in this case, and I'm hard-pressed to find an attorney who would actually take a case. They might try to claim some type of excessive force, but given the videos that we've all seen, I think that argument would certainly fail. Now, as far as the police officers, I believe there were two police officers that actually were killed, and I'm sure a number of police officers that were injured. Because they were in the course of their employment, their sole remedy against their employer or the United States government would be filing a workers' comp claim. So that would be an administrative process where the people who were injured or the families of those that were killed would be entitled to some workers' compensation benefits, which is a different process altogether. However, they can go and sue private individuals. So if the police officers go out who were injured and sue the individuals that caused the injuries, they could bring that case in state court. But suing and collecting against an individual, Jay, is very difficult. The insurance companies, like homeowners insurance, would disclaim for individual acts. So they have to actually sue personally with no insurance. And I just don't see a lot of personal injury claims arising out of the situation that happened there, Jay.
You know, you take the family, and we're talking with John Bell, leading labor attorney. You take that family of Brian Sicknick, who died from injuries sustained while confronting on these protesters. You know, it's amazing, John, that police are under the jurisdiction, right, of D.C. itself, District of Columbia. And workers, I would think, the compensation includes some sort of death benefit there, but yet the police can't sue the government under workman's comp. It's unbelievable when you think about it.
That's right. They have to go through this OWCC process, which is a separate workers' compensation process only for federal employees. And there's very few attorneys in the country that specifically deal with this OWCC issue. I know a few just from being in the field. But, you know, good attorneys are hard to come by. Now, again, there will be a benefit and there will be a lifelong benefit as a result. So they will be awarded a certain monetary relief. But, you know, on the same token, you know, there was, you know, the federal government, in my opinion, did drop the ball. They should have been more prepared for what was potentially going to happen here and what ultimately did happen. But that doesn't take the blame away from the protesters and ultimately what they did in storming the Capitol building, which was obviously a huge black eye on what we stand for as United States citizens.
John, what about the situation of the family or the estate of Brian Sicknick? Could they sue maybe third parties if they believe they were negligent? And that could include the rioters. I mean, when you think about it, what about a loophole regarding that and third parties?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we described, which is the fact that so they're going to get some benefit in OWCP, workers' compensation. They can bring a case against the rioters, not only the police officers that were injured, but the families of those police officers that were killed. They can bring individual cases against these individuals. And if these individuals have property like homes or cars or whatever, any type of valuable assets, they could try to collect on that. But generally speaking, your average attorney generally doesn't accept cases unless there's some type of insurance coverage, because you could sue somebody individually, and a lot of times the person doesn't appear. You get a default judgment. If they do appear, it's very difficult to collect. People move their assets. They shield their assets. And at the end of the day, both for the family and for the lawyer, you know, a decision or any type of monetary award means nothing unless you could actually collect on it. And going against an individual makes it very, very difficult to collect.
I think more of the investigation will have to come out. Obviously, an undermanned force taking on those protesters. And, you know, listen, harm's way, putting people in harm's way, it's going to be interesting when this thing unravels as to why this happened. That could play some sort of a role, I would think, in a lawsuit of some kind here, no?
Potentially, Jay. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, anybody could file a claim for anything, right? It's a matter of will they be successful or not. You know, the rioters, obviously, they assume some risk by going in there, trespassing, acting in a violent way. I mean, the law is essentially going to be very cold towards awarding them any type of damages for their actions that they voluntarily took. And they were intentionally reckless and negligent in their own respect. So trying for them to then make a lawsuit out of it and collect, I doubt they're going to be successful. But if we're talking technically, they could certainly file a claim. They could certainly bring the case into district court and have a district court judge assigned. They could certainly go through the process of litigation. But at the end, it's very, very doubtful that they're going to be successful unless that's something that we're really just not aware of.
Very tricky indeed. John Bell Law Group. Let's get into two things here. The unemployment benefits kicking in. I think a week was missed as far as trying to get something going again regarding the relief bill, the extra $300 and everything else. That is in full play right now, correct?
Yes. So people are going to get an extra $300 a week. It was part of the $900 billion rescue aid package. That $300 a week is supposed to continue until sometime in March. If any states, including New York, missed a period of time, it will be retroactive. So a lot of people will enjoy that extra $300 on top of the regular state benefit, and the regular state benefit pays up to $504 a week. You know, we're still looking at unemployment here on Long Island. I think the numbers came out in November at 5.4%, which was down from October, the month before, at 6.3%. But we're doing really well, you know, compared to the worst time here in Long Island, which hit up to about 16.1%. So we're still doing fairly well. New York City remains at 11.8%, so it's still pretty high. But even that's down from over 20%. So we're still trending in the right direction, Jay. But as you know, and we're hearing it from you, you're reporting it well, the numbers are still out of control, and sometimes, you know, we hear they're continuing to get worse. So hopefully we'll continue with this trend of people who are unemployed in Long Island, you know, seeing the continuing decrease of those numbers. But I'm a little skeptical given the increase of the virus.
Especially with the PPP going round two yesterday, you know, I'm very concerned. We know that, you know, that there is a massive difference between Wall Street and Main Street. We had the great Marty Cantor on yesterday, and we kind of went into this a little bit regarding, you know, what's at stake here. Listen, I still can't get out of my head regarding the indoor dining aspect of things. Even the governor acknowledged we can't, you know, close too long based on the rollout, the vaccination. You know, I still look at the numbers, John, around the nation. I think it's 110,000 plus restaurants permanently closed since March. The 2.1 million restaurant jobs lost since March. I look at the 163,000, give or take, of the small businesses closed since March. So, you know, the big question is, you know, is it in the nick of time or is it a little too late for some? And that's going to be quite interesting in the next couple of months as we see, you know, what happens based on this relief bill and this and the PPP from yesterday.
Sure, Jay. And I'd like to add to your point there that although I'm a big proponent of a $15 minimum wage, at this point in time, things are very, very difficult for small businesses. And I think it would have been smart for Cuomo to issue some type of pause order on the increase of minimum wage, you know, for your employer and employee listeners out there. You know, Long Island moved up a dollar from $13 to $14 an hour minimum wage. And with small businesses barely trying to hold on, that can make a significant impact between keeping open and closing the doors. So even though the initial intention years ago, which was to increase minimum wage slowly over a period of time to $15 an hour, I would have liked to see a little bit of a pause on this one, Jay.
Now, listen, I think I'm with you. As hurting as businesses are, and quite frankly, you know, with the unemployment, the extra $300 and everything else, to me, it wouldn't have hurt to put that on pause. No question about it. Last one, with this vaccine rollout and everything else, you know, we've had a lot of questions regarding employers about making this vaccination mandatory. So I'll ask you this. Can they do that? Can they implement something regarding their employees that they're going to have to show some sort of proof regarding the vaccination? Do you see that in play? Where are we at with that?
So as far as the law is concerned, employers can require employees to get the vaccine. And if employees refuse to get the vaccine, they can be terminated. Except there's a big exception. If you have a disability that qualifies under the ADA, the Americans with Disability Act, where you get a letter from your doctor wherein you can't take the vaccine because of this medical condition, there can be an interactive process to get some type of reasonable accommodation. So there is an exception for the Americans with Disability Act, including in New York State and New York City as well. But ultimately, you know, the answer to the general question is employers can require that.
All right. You mentioned medical. We went through this with the measles vaccine and religion. What about exemptions based on religious reasons? Do you see that coming into play?
That's an interesting question, Jay. I haven't read anything on that yet. All the articles in the EEOC, which gave their opinions, focused on disabilities. However, this is a developing law, Jay. Obviously, this is brand new. I wouldn't be surprised if there is some type of religious accommodation being made, but you got to be prepared to show that you generally follow this particular religion, and this is really part of it. It can't be somebody who wants Friday and Saturday off and pretends to be Jewish or Orthodox. You have to really show that you follow it.
I get it. Regarding employers, they can require it, but they might not want to. I mean, you know, think about it. Let's be honest, regarding tracking and compliance and, the extra administrative stuff that has to be put in play with all this stuff, it might be a huge headache. They might just want to forego it, I would think, the bulk of it, John.
I agree with you. I'm hearing from employers that they certainly, even though it's in their rights to require it, they're leaning more towards just encouraging their employees to get it and still have the safety protocol. And most, not all, but most of the people I'm speaking to actually do want to get the vaccine so they can move on from this terrible virus, which has been affecting us for almost a year now, which is crazy to think about it. But I think that most employers, unless you work maybe in the healthcare field and you're around patients and you're at risk of getting other people sick, I think most places will simply just encourage it instead of require it.
I think so. I kind of agree with you. I think they would strongly encourage it and without requiring it. But, they would put all of it there for an employee as far as the pros and cons and everything else. So interesting what will come in the next couple of months. Jonathan Bell, ladies and gentlemen, labor attorney extraordinaire. Check it out on the website, BellLG.com, BellLG.com. The Bell Law Group. Always a pleasure, and don't be a stranger, okay?
I certainly want. It's great to be back, Jay, and we'll definitely talk very soon.